This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If anything feels off, there's probably a hormone that is being impacted, whether it's energy, whether it's you're having acne or really dry skin, your hair is falling out or it's thinning, you have big weight changes that have happened, whether it's up or down, not feeling like you're ever hungry throughout the day. Those are all just like different types of common symptoms that I feel like a lot of women kind of normalize and they just go about their day just dealing with.
Let's take a breath. Hi guys, I'm Sydney Lodwako and welcome to Something to Share. Every Wednesday, I share the mic with people you may recognize, experts in their fields, people I find inspirational, or people who make me laugh, like my fiance Nick, giving them a platform to dive into the things that they really want to talk about. We all have something to share, something that we're going through, and something that we need to hear. So let's get started. Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm excited about having a great guest on today, and this topic is very top of mind for me as I am focusing more on my hormones, finding ways to support my health. I told you guys this last week on Instagram, but if you didn't see it, I decided to take out I had a hormonal IUD. I was using the Mirena. I think I had it in the episode. I said like less than a year, but I'm pretty sure it might have been 2 years. So the timing is, I'm not really sure about, but I had it in. Before that, I had the copper IUD. That one worked for me for many years. It's supposed to last like 10 years, which is wild, but that one worked for me for a while until I started getting really horrible periods, like awful pain. It was right when Nick and I first started dating, but I had to go to the hospital because I was in so much pain. I was staying up all night, like in agony, and it got really bad. So I got that one out, and then I got the Mirena one, and it was working for me. But the entire time I had it, I always had really bad hormonal acne, like constantly. It wasn't just around my period. It was just like constantly dealing with really bad acne, which I guess can be normal, but I never struggled with acne my entire life. Not even when I was a teenager, I would have like maybe one breakout a year. So it was just something that I never really had to deal with. So it was hard for me to understand why this was happening and figure out how to take care of it. But with the idea, just really, there was nothing I could do. I changed out my skincare. I was taking great care of my skin. I was watching my products that I was putting on my body and my hair, like all of the things, but it really wasn't making a difference. And I kind of got sick of it. With getting married in May and wanting to eventually have kids pretty soon, probably, who knows on timing, but we wanted to make sure that my body was feeling good and in the right place and healthy. So I got it taken out last week. It's very simple. And I do feel better, but I will update you as far as symptoms and things go. But so far, so good. But we have Lauren Papanos on the podcast. She's a registered integrative dietitian. She's a certified specialist in sports dietetics, and she's a published hormone health researcher. She is incredibly knowledgeable. You'll see it in this episode, hear it when she talks about hormone health and the research she's done and the clients she's worked with. She just has so much knowledge and research in this area and is going to give us a lot of information on hormone health, whether you are just trying to get your energy to a good place, or maybe you have certain symptoms that you're trying to overcome that might be related to your hormones, or maybe you're working to get pregnant soon, or you're postpartum, or really anything. Hormones are related to literally everything that we do. So we're going to do a very, very big deep dive today, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. She is incredible. I asked her every question I could think of, and I just think this topic is super important and definitely really popular right now. I see it a lot on social media, people talking about cycle syncing and working with their hormones and getting up birth control and all of those things. But with this topic, just make sure that you're doing what's going to work best for you. Like for me, what was working best for the time of life that I'm in was to get off my hormonal birth control, was to take my IUD out, but that might not be the right fix for everyone. So with whatever information that you gather, you get from this episode or in general, like always do what's best for you. Always really take time to figure out what that is. Like, yes, hear information, hear from experts, but always know and do what's going to be best for you. So I'm not telling you to do any of those things. I'm not telling you to take your IUD out if you have one. I'm not telling you any of those things. I'm just sharing what has worked for me. So I hope that with this episode and episodes like this, that you find little tidbits and information that's going to help support you and give you all that you need for your best, healthiest life. So enjoy this episode with Lauren. Share it with someone who can relate to it or is going through something similar with maybe lack of energy or just wants some resources in this area. Send this along to them. Tag us on social media if you enjoyed the episode. And as always, we love a 5-star review. Please enjoy this episode with Lauren. You guys are going to love her. Well, Lauren, we're going to jump in. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Good. I was just telling you before we pressed record that I'm good. It's just a little bit hectic morning because my husband just got in a car accident. So, he's not the greatest driver and it's very stressful.
See, in my relationship, I'm your husband.
Okay. And
yeah.
There's always one, you know?
Yeah. I've gotten my fair share of really dumb car accidents. I once got stuck on someone else's parked car.
Oh,
so that's what we're dealing with here. But yeah, he's not alone.
Tickets and like speeding tickets, like parking in the wrong spot tickets. And I don't, it's like very obvious, like, you know, there's signs and things, but he just, I don't know, still does it. So
sounds like we're cut from the same cloth.
Yes.
It's good to know that I'm not alone, but
we're not.
We are going to obviously talk through tons of hormone things and all of that subject because it's pretty large and there's a lot of like avenues that we can go with it. So I'm excited to like really pick your brain. Nice. Before we do, we'll just do like a little icebreaker. I ask these two questions when I have guests. So the first one is to share an object. So anything really, it could be I've had people share chapstick or I've had people share sex stories. So really anything, something from your nightstand, something surprising or something with an interesting backstory. So what does that bring up for you?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if you can see it on the video, but this is a thermometer and it's a particular thermometer that is essentially the same thermometer you would use under the tongue, but it's from a company called Natural Cycles. Mm-hmm. But it's relevant to today's discussion because this is a way to be able to track your menstrual cycle. And you do that through testing your basal body temperatures every morning when you first wake up. So mm-hmm. I always have this next to my bedside to take my temperature first thing in the morning and then log it. I recently have gotten the Oura Ring, so I don't take it through my mouth as much as I used to because now the ring tracks it for you, which is really nice, yeah. But still have it on my nightstand to just double check and make sure that the results are accurate because it is the most accurate way to be able to know where you are in your cycle. So yeah, it's a really great tool. And I have a lot of my clients, I teach them on how to utilize it because it really can give you such great insight into not just where you are in your cycle, but also your thyroid hormone production, your progesterone production, when you're in your fertile window, when you're not. So it's like this little device that really has so much data behind it.
Is that your only form of birth control, if you don't mind me asking? Because I've been curious about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have an IUD right now. I used to have the copper one and it was horrible towards the end there. Like I started getting like horrible periods, like the worst kind of pain. So I had to get that one out and then I needed some options. So I've been trying the hormonal one, but I've always been like not a fan of any hormonal birth control. I wasn't on anything for a while, but I definitely want to come off this one because it's making me break out and all these things. Yeah. So that's my plan. But I'm curious on using stuff like Natural Cycles. I also have the Oura Ring and I'm obsessed with it. And it's actually insanely accurate for tracking your period. Like it's crazy. Yeah. Like it knew it when I was getting the flu the other week and just it knows it's like your period starting the next couple of days. I'm like, shit, I forgot. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So do you recommend that for people like getting off birth control and trying that route? Do you find that it works and it's successful for your clients and people that use it?
Definitely. Yeah. It can take a couple of months for it to really be an effective route after birth control, because one of the ways that birth control works is that it does block ovulation so that you're not fertile, right? So with the basal body temperature method, that's really what it's tracking for is if and when you're ovulating. So I would say on average, some women, you know, they start ovulating right away, but other women, it could take 3 or 6 months to start ovulating again. I mean, if you're not ovulating, then you're not going to get pregnant, right? So there's that, right? But It's good to start testing as soon as you get off so that you can start to gather that data and know, you know, where are you? How long is it taking for your period to resume? And, you know, you can have a period and have what's called an anovulatory cycle where you bleed, but you're not ovulating. And mm-hmm. that's definitely a cause for concern. And we want to ask the bigger questions as to like, why is this happening? Right. So mm-hmm. it's also a really good checkpoint to know, okay, is everything hormonally doing pretty good without having to like go get your blood work done every month?
So you would recommend when you're getting upper control to test right away or like wait a couple weeks and start testing? What would you recommend with that process?
Yeah, I mean, I would start testing right away because you don't want to miss the opportunity. There's really what's going to happen when you start testing with your basal body temperatures is the first 2 weeks of your cycle when you're in the follicular phase, your basal body temperatures are going to be a bit on the lower end. So that varies between women and can be dependent off of your thyroid hormone production. So we just need to find the average for you. Say most women, it's somewhere between like 96.5 to 97.5 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when you ovulate, you get a big spike of about 0.5 to a full degree. And then once that spike happens, your temperatures are going to stay elevated for the next 2 weeks. So they'll stay up around that 98, 98.5 range. And then it's really cool. The day before you start your period, your temperature will actually drop back down. And that's when you know that you're going to start your period the next day.
That's so fascinating. I'm very interested to see how that's going to work if I feel like, because I haven't been on this one for more than a year, I think, but I'm interested to see like how I feel after.
Yeah.
And how
the process it'll, I mean, IUDs are a little bit easier to kind of like rebound after. They don't have as much impact on how the brain and ovaries are communicating as does an oral contraceptive. So you probably have, it'll probably happen faster for you because of that.
Okay. I'm going to ask you some definitely more birth control questions later on, but there's tons. But before we jump into all those, one last question, anything that's been on your heart or mind lately, it could be related to your work or just general heart or mind stuff that's been going on for you.
Yeah. There's been, I mean, so much, honestly, I'm kind of in this like odd transition right now. Well, I've been doing a lot of inner work the past 6 months or so. I went through like a, just kind of a like low state, low vibration. I would say I got married in March of last year. And then anyone that's like gotten married can probably relate to this, but it's like, there's such this buildup up into your wedding and it's like so exciting. And then afterwards you kind of just like hit this lull where it's like, you don't have this dopamine rush happening on a daily basis anymore. And like, you know, it's just, you just kind of have to like readjust, you know? And so I just kind of went through this like lull a couple months after our wedding and it's like, okay, I've got to get myself out of this spot. You know, like, why am I here? I can't figure out, you know, why I'm just like so blue. And so I've been doing so much inner work trying to, you know, like better myself, you know, for the good. And so a lot of things have come up with that, but I am not sure if you're familiar with ketamine, but it's a treatment for people that are resistant to antidepressants. And so I actually started recently doing ketamine to be able to just kind of like add an extra layer to things. And so one of the things that came up for me recently was like this image of a light. And it's funny because when I was back in grad school, I had a very similar thing happen where I hadn't, you know, seen this through ketamine, but where I was like really obsessed with candles and was like very obsessed with kind of like this slogan of be the light. Right. And so, and through this ketamine experience, I saw this like light inside my body. And, basically like I went out into my neighborhood and I just started bringing this like candle. And essentially if you've ever like taken a candle and then you use that light to be able to light another candle, right. It was like, that was happening, but instead of like me actually like lighting someone's candle, it was like lighting them. So it was giving them a piece of my light. Right. And so really what I took from it was that I think sometimes we try to help other people or we try to stay in a good mood, but then as soon as we hit adversity, maybe you have like a bad day or you let those things impact you too much. And what I experienced through this was it's, you give someone a piece of your light, but you still keep your candle lit. Right. So like you're still keeping that light, that positive energy within you. But you are helping be able to make someone's day better. So yeah, I've just been like wrapping my head around a lot around that concept and journaling on it, reflecting on it a lot. And so it's been really good and really interesting to try to incorporate into my daily life.
I love that. One, I'm getting married in May. So I'm already like prepping myself internally for what they call that blue period after. And I know it's going to come. I'm obsessed. Like every single morning I wake up and I just scroll through Pinterest and it just kind of consumes me right now. And I'm just letting it, because for a while I was like stressed about work or trying to figure out what I want to do for my next steps. And my future husband was like, let's just focus. We have the wedding like in the next few months. Like that's your focus right now. And we'll worry about those things later. But then I'm worried about the fear of like, okay, well, once the wedding's over, I won't have my energy to focus on that. And then I'll be like, back to square one. So I totally understand that. And I love that little vision you had of keeping your candle lit, because I think that that's a big thing for women in general too, just like always giving, 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 like filling other people up first and making sure people are taken care of first and then caring about yourself. But I think it's super important to also that self-care and just like checking in with yourself as well. And I also saw on the Today Show like 2 days ago, they were talking about ketamine therapy for depression and how that's becoming more of like a mainstream thing. They talked about like, it was called Field Trip, this company. It looked really cool. They do like this meditation thing and then they take you through a ketamine process. I've never looked into it before, but I think it's fascinating, all these new treatments that are coming out for depression and stuff.
It's pretty awesome. And there's quite a bit of research on it for, you know, depression, PTSD, and different mental health disorders. So it can be really helpful. Of course, it's not the magic pill, right?
Yeah.
That everyone wants in any area, but it can be supportive for sure.
Love that. And I love that you've like found something that's kind of worked for you.
Yeah.
So let's talk hormones. This is really big right now on social media. Like a lot of people are talking about cycle syncing and just like working out for your hormones and cystic acne and all these things that are very common for people that I think in the past people might have overlooked or like not really had a lot of information around. So I think it's great that this conversation seems pretty common or more common nowadays. But I also feel like hormones can be super complicated and hard to figure out. And there's a lot of jargon around it. So first, I would love to know like how you brought your work from being like a dietitian and working with people with like food and things, but how you turned your focus to mostly hormones and why you came to that choice with your work.
So a lot of it began with my own personal story. When I was 18, 19 years old, I actually was a college cheerleader. And so I cheered in college and did partner stunts. And I just, you know, increased activity level really quickly. And, you know, there was a big focus on image, of course, too. And so, you know, I was always eating really clean and, you know, was studying nutrition at that time. And so was kind of applying a lot of the principles I was learning in school of like, how I should be educating someone on how to eat, but didn't realize like what my activity level truly was. Cause like, oh, I'm just like, you know, on the sidelines for like 3 hours. Like it's not that hard. You know what I mean? But like you are on your feet, like dancing and moving around for 3 hours. And so you don't really think about that. And so, I had lost my period and I, you know, tried really everything in the book, went to every doctor, every specialist, and could not get my period back. And I knew subconsciously that that wasn't good to not have a period. Just what I'd learned so far in school. And I also have always known that I wanted a family one day. And so it was definitely like very, even as at 19 years old, I was like, okay, I've got to fix this as soon as possible. You know, like I can't let this go on, because I knew the longer I let it go on that the worse things would get. And so I really just was like very frustrated, feeling like my body really was kind of like revolting against me. Right. And so during my dietetic internship, as I was becoming a registered dietitian, I interned with a functional medicine doctor, and he kind of looked at my case and was like, let's run some advanced testing. And, you know, I think I have like some ideas of what could be going on here. And so he, you know, had some strategies that hadn't been explored yet for me, and they worked. And it was very life-changing for me and like a very emotional experience, because I had felt like I was broken for 4 years, but I didn't have my period. And like all of a sudden I was healed. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I continued to have like normal periods, you know, after that, from that point forward. And so fast forward a few months, I just started my career, and I initially worked as a collegiate sports dietitian and was working at different Division I universities and was seeing a ton of female athletes that were dealing with very similar things, not just amenorrhea or no period, but also PCOS and a lot of symptoms to go along with that. Even though they were so active and they were eating well and they were doing all of the like textbook right things, you know? And so I really started to kind of like niche down even as a collegiate dietitian into that area. And when I went and worked at UCLA, I had the ability to work with the medical team there. And one of the doctors on staff, she studies female athlete triad, which is essentially, it's like a triad of different things that cause female athletes to lose their menstrual cycle. And so I was able to actually like do a research study and like start using all these labs and seeing so many female athletes that were dealing with the same thing. And so, you know, eventually I ultimately decided to leave college athletics because I wanted to help women in a greater ability and not just with amenorrhea, but also other types of hormonal related things that could be causing, you know, irregular cycles or could be causing thyroid issues and things alike. So that was really how I, you know, got started in the whole area. And then it's, I mean, you know, since I've been practicing within hormones and, you know, the endocrine system for the last 7 years, it's just like continued to expand from there as I've continued to work with more women and seen like what else is going on at the same time that they're having these types of like period issues and finding like what their root cause is and then starting to like dive down that rabbit hole. Right. So it's really cool. You know, I feel like where I'm at with practice and, you know, just really being able to understand what is that common denominator between so many women that are dealing with different hormone issues. And also being able, like, I feel so strongly that nutrition and lifestyle are the biggest determinants of our hormonal health. And I think a lot, there's a lot of talk, or maybe there had been, that, you know, hormones are just, they are what they are, or, you know, the only way you can impact hormones is by supplementing with like, you know, exogenous hormones. But the more that I've seen, the more, you know, research I've done, that's not the case. The way that we eat, the way that we take care of ourselves, our lifestyle that we choose, that way that that's all balanced, root causes that are going on within our body, all of those are really what are going to impact our body's hormone function.
Yeah, we're so complicated as far as like our systems go, but it is super interesting how there's so many like commonalities as well. I'm curious on what you, what your findings were when you were looking at all those athletes, because I think that's so normalized, especially when I grew up as a dancer. So like, it was just like a normal thing and almost like cool if you lost your period. It sounds weird, but like that meant you were working really hard and that meant you like you were exercising a lot, or I don't know. There's like that weird psyche around it, but I feel like that was very normalized and very common. So what did you find from that with your research?
It typically was, you know, a couple different things that were going on, but I would say the biggest one is a lack of energy availability, which is essentially the term that means that your expenditure is exceeding your input of, you know, energy intake. Maybe they were not eating adequately to be able to support training load. Maybe they weren't eating the right foods to be able to support that at the right times, right? And so their body was kind of going into this stress situation. It could also be because they were under a lot of psychological stress because they're trying to do really good in academics and sport all at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was causing the irregular cycles. There was just a lot of just focus on body composition and on the way that, you know, their body looked. And so sometimes, you know, athletes would go all summer not training or very, you know, very small amounts of training, and then all of a sudden get thrown back into, you know, 3 hour long practices. And, you know, you don't realize how really stressful that is to your body. Like, our hormones are constantly auditing our environment. And so, you know, our reproductive system is voluntary. If our body senses there's like danger or that there's this stress, it's not going to want to reproduce because that's not a safe environment to be able to carry a baby. Right. And so it's just going to shut off the reproductive system until it does feel safe, because it needs everything else, like your heart, your brain, your lungs, to be able to function. So that's a lot of times what was going on. It was just a mismanagement of things. And really, I think it's just like lack of education, you know, on young, you know, adults to be able to know, like, how do I have to modify these factors when something like that changes?
That's so interesting. Yeah. And I think there's also not a lot of education around it. And it's scary too, because when you're young like that, like, that's when your things are just fully forming. And if you're like losing your period and you're adding all that extra stress on your body, it's a lot. But also, it's so, like, even with athletes, I feel like kids these days, it's so common for them to have like 20 different sports and stay up. Like, I remember staying up like late nights in middle school. Like, that's when I had most of my late nights, was when I was a child still. So it's just like crazy what's expected of kids. That's a whole other podcast, but there's definitely a lack of knowledge, because I feel like you get like your training in what, like, health class, and that's really it. It's kind of like a baseline understanding, and there's so many more nuances. I'm curious, because I think things could be off for women in general, or they might be feeling like low energy or low libido or just things that might be related to hormones. But what are some other like not so common or not so easy to detect kind of signs that your hormones may be off, or you need to like look deeper into your hormones?
There's so many different types of hormones, right? You've got like your reproductive hormones, your sex hormones, things like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. You've got thyroid hormones, you've got adrenal hormones, and then you've even got like hunger hormones and pancreatic hormones and things. So, you know, we've got tons of them in our body, but I would say if we're just talking about the reproductive system and those sex hormones, then, you know, definitely understanding your cycle and, you know, where you are in your cycle. If your cycles are regular, and you know, every woman's cycle is going to be a different length. I typically average a 30 to 32 day cycle, but someone else might average a 38 to 40 day cycle, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have imbalanced hormones just because you might be on the higher or lower end of it, but it could, especially if there's a lot of variability where one month you have a 24 day cycle, another month you have a 38 day cycle, right? And there's a lot of variability that's happening. Also, if you're not ovulating, if you're not seeing that positive ovulation reading, whether it's through tracking your basal body temperatures or through using ovulation test strips, then that definitely indicates that there's some progesterone and cortisol issues that are going on. So like, those are just some things that are kind of on the easier end to identify, but from a symptoms perspective, I mean, hormones are going to impact like every way that our body functions, right? So if anything feels off, there's probably a hormone that is being impacted, whether it's energy, whether it's you're having acne or really dry skin, your hair is falling out or it's thinning, you've got hirsutism, abnormal hair growth on the face. You have big weight changes that have happened, whether it's up or down, but particularly if you've gained weight, especially in like the abdominal region, or you feel like there's kind of like weight loss resistance happening, you know, difficulty gaining muscle mass, fatigue, waking up in the middle of the night, especially around like 2 to 4 a.m., you know, not feeling like you're ever hungry throughout the day. Those are all just like different types of common symptoms that I feel like a lot of women kind of normalize and they just go about their day just dealing with. And, you know, I would say in practice, the number one thing I hear from most women is like energy and hitting that like afternoon 3 to 4 p.m. slump. Especially because a lot of women I work with, they're entrepreneurs, they're, you know, business professionals, and they're just, you know, working during that time and they can't get through the workday.
Yeah. I think it's really hard in those like fast track lifestyles to maintain those things. Is it possible? Because I know that women and men tend to have to work differently when it's related to hormones. And like, for example, for exercise, like we don't have as much energy just during certain parts of our cycle. So like working in like a corporate environment, is it possible to have like it all? Like, is it possible to find a place where you can like go those long hours and work all night and exercise really early in the morning and all those things that many like working women do, plus have like families and things? Like, is it possible to have like it all, or do you need to make adjustments in your life to have that support for your health and your hormones and things like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's possible to have it all, but I think that becoming intuitive with your body and also being able to, I call it a stress cup, but it's like, you know, your body doesn't know the difference between different stressors. So sleep deprivation, stress from work, stress from family, stress from not eating enough, or, you know, missing meals and things, stress from hard workouts, all of those are perceived the same in our body. So if one of those stressors is more elevated, then something has to decrease. You can't keep like burning the candle at all ends, right? Or something will go hormonally. So it's really just knowing where you are, what season of life you're in, and then adjusting accordingly. I, for example, had like a really stressful last week with my husband. He had some health stuff come up. And so I didn't do like my normal workouts. I still worked out, but they were much lower in intensity than they normally would be. And it was just a way to be able to honor my body, knowing that like that stress cup was higher from other sources that aren't usually elevated. Right. So it's just knowing, you know, what's going on, and then definitely being smart about how you're structuring things too, and setting those boundaries for yourself as well. And I think that that can be challenging when, you know, for some women I work with, it's like their job is demanding them to have to get some project done, and they don't really have a choice but to stay up till 1 a.m. and then wake up at 6 a.m. to be able to do it all. And like, that's hard, you know, it's really hard. Yeah. So maybe it is, you know, pulling back on your workouts and not working out as frequently during that time period that that's happening. Maybe it's having some type of like meal prep service or something you use instead of, you know, creating more time for yourself to have to cook, and just finding like shortcuts and strategies that can do a pretty good job or a good enough job, but are taking some of that burden and that time off of you.
Working within the confines of what your life is asking of you. I think that makes a lot of sense. For testing, and when you're looking at, is it a blood panel, or like what kind of testing do you recommend, or what kind of testing do you offer to your clients, and what should we be looking at when we get that type of testing as far as like hormonally and like health-wise? What should we be looking at for those things? Yeah.
So it really depends on, you know, what someone's symptoms are, where those imbalances lie, of course. So I typically will individualize it to my conversation with someone of, you know, understanding like through an assessment what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, hormone testing is always a really helpful starting point, but the number one mistake I see women make is that they just go to the doctor and ask for their hormones to be tested and they don't know what hormones to ask for. And so maybe the doctor doesn't really like feel like they need the hormone testing. So they're kind of just running like a very baseline panel, or they don't know where they are in their cycle. And so when you get those results back, there's, you know, your hormones are changing every week. So if you don't know where you are in your cycle, when you get that testing done, it's like, it's not good data because we don't know what reference range to compare you to. Right. Okay. And like, we can kind of guess based off of, if you look at everything at the same time, but it's just not great data. So it's really important that when you do get your hormones tested, I usually recommend that if someone's testing in blood, they test day 3 of their cycle, which is like, day 1 is the first day you bleed. So a couple of days into your period. And if you test through urine, which has some benefits outside of blood, because you're able to also test for metabolites, which are like a whole nother sciencey conversation. But they do give us a little bit more information, then it's best to test around day 20 to 23, because that's when your progesterone is going to be most elevated. So again, you know, you just want to make sure you're testing at either ends of those, and that you're also really, you know, not just looking for the hormones, but also one of the things I really preach when I'm working with women, and especially because I don't do hormone replacement therapy, like my practice is built off of taking a woman that has imbalanced hormones and trying to figure out what the root cause is, like, why are those hormones imbalanced? Mm-hmm. And then using that as the tool to be able to fix the hormones. So a lot of times I might use the initial hormone testing to be able to kind of get a gauge of like, okay, where are these imbalances? How does this make sense in the bigger picture of things? But then I'm always going to be running testing with it, whether it's in the gut, whether it's like through the liver, looking at like toxicity and things, you know, adrenals, looking at cortisol, stress hormone levels, maybe like vitamin status, because those are going to help me really be able to understand what do we need to fix to be able to let the hormones kind of fall back into the place that they should be. Because hormones really should be able to be balanced if we have balance within our body's internal functioning, right? So that's kind of my approach, is figuring out where there's imbalance in the body and fixing that so that the hormones correct themselves.
I love that. It's so sciencey, but also there's so much information that you can get from that. It's so interesting. Is it possible for someone that is on birth control or that is taking some type of like IUDs or anything, is it possible to get that same information, or it doesn't make sense at all because your cycle is not happening naturally? Like, how does that work for people that are taking contraceptives?
Yeah. So it is a little bit of a different situation, and it will depend on what type of birth control you're on as well. As I mentioned earlier, with IUDs, it tends to vary in terms of how much it impacts hormone function. Oral contraceptives are going to shut off hormones a lot more than an IUD will. But there are some oral contraceptives that are like lower dose as well that also can, you know, kind of differentiate that too. But I typically find that especially after someone's had an IUD for a couple of years, that their hormones will start to kind of like get back up to where they were, because generally what's going to happen when you're on birth control is that there's a hormone called sex hormone binding globulin, and that's going to increase and it's going to bind up. So it's going to kind of like steal those hormones. So when you go to test in blood, it's going to look like you're not making hardly anything. And then once you come off birth control, that sex hormone binding globulin will start to slowly decrease, and then those hormones will start to appear. But that's one of the reasons why birth control works really well for women that have issues with like acne, hirsutism, some of those high androgen situations, because that sex hormone binding globulin is like kind of keeping all of those behind the door, right? But then sometimes when women come off birth control, it's like the door opens and the floodgates, all those hormones come out to play, right? Yeah. So yeah, it is possible. It depends, of course, on how long someone's been on birth control, what type of birth control they're on. It also depends what hormones you're testing. I'm typically not going to test estrogen, progesterone, testosterone when someone's on birth control, but if they're having hormone imbalance symptoms that might indicate that there's adrenal issues going on, maybe testing cortisol, testing DHEA could be helpful. Testing insulin levels, testing thyroid hormone levels, that can give us a lot of information that can still be explored when someone is on birth control.
Okay. So there is that possibility. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You mentioned root causes. Are there some common root causes that a lot of people experience? Is it environmental? Is it what we're eating? Is it like genetic? Like, what are some common things that you've seen from your clients?
I would say that across the board, most women I work with, the adrenals are a huge mm-hmm. player in why their progesterone, why their thyroid levels are not where we want them to be.
Yeah.
And the adrenals are these little glands that are on top of our kidneys, and they mainly secrete stress hormones. So mainly, like, people have probably heard of cortisol before, adrenaline, right? Those fight or flight type hormones. And it's not just our lifestyle that necessarily can cause issues with cortisol. Like, it's not just this feeling of like overwhelm and stress that you're under. There's also things like in the gut that are causing inflammation, for example, mm-hmm. that can also cause more stress in the body, or like deficiencies in nutrients that are used to be able to help with this hormone function that can also cause these issues. So I would say, though, that the adrenals are a really great place to start with it.
Yeah.
And I think that most women have, you know, either really high cortisol levels because they're in like the early stages of burnout, or mm-hmm. they're in like the end stages of burnout, and now their body is no longer making adequate cortisol. And so they just feel tired all the time. It kind of feels like they're always sleeping. And then their hormones are, you know, sex hormones are all kind of messed up because of that, because the adrenals play a really big role in how the brain talks to the thyroid, how the brain communicates with the ovaries. So if we're seeing imbalance in the adrenals, you're going to also see that impact the thyroid and the ovary hormone production.
Mm-hmm. It's like a domino effect.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's connected, you know, yeah. And that's why with like integrative medicine, it really is such a actual like fix for people, because, you know, a lot of times with conventional medicine, it's kind of looking at the body in parts. So it's like, okay, you go to a gastroenterologist, you go to an endocrinologist, right? And you're looking mm-hmm. at one part. But with integrative or functional medicine, we're really looking at the body as one whole system. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see a lot more long-term change happen, because you're not just kind of like fixing, it's like repairing a, you know, a leak, and then you just like put something over the leak, but you yeah. don't actually like pull apart the wall and figure out like why did the leak happen in the first place, right? It definitely is all very much connected.
Yeah, this reminded me when I was like in a few years back, but I was like living in New York City. It was like very high stress, probably like cortisol was happening, but like I would get like really crazy stomach issues, and I would go to the stomach doctor, and they're like, well, it's everything seems fine. Like, we did the testing there, and they're like, it's just take like a Pepcid before a stressful situation, and it should work itself out. But I'm sure there was like so many other things going on.
Yeah.
And just like the symptom of it, we try to fix the one symptom, but I don't think we got to the root cause. So that's fascinating. Exactly. Now I'm going to go back and look at that. Big thing with hormones too is pregnancy. And I've had friends that have had trouble with getting pregnant, or have had like postpartum problems. Like, their pregnancy, I'm sure, is a time where like hormones get like pushed or like stretched or things like that. So what do you recommend, or what do you see commonly during that period of time in women's lives? And is there anything that we should be doing, like maybe before we're looking to get pregnant, and even like after pregnancy, like anything to support our body and our hormones and stuff like that?
So one of the biggest things I see with women is that there's kind of this like epidemic, if you will, of low progesterone issues. Mm-hmm. And that means that women aren't ovulating, or maybe they're ovulating, but the progesterone levels aren't quite getting to where they need to be. And one of the big reasons for that is because cortisol, which is that stress hormone, actually will block progesterone from being able to bind to its receptors. And so a lot of women are under a lot of stress, and that's causing them to not make adequate progesterone levels. And so one of the best things that you can do before, you know, trying to conceive is, one, understanding where your progesterone levels are, also where your thyroid hormone levels are, because remember that the thyroid, most people know it as regulating metabolism, but it also is our growth hormone. So it's going to regulate how all processes grow and the speed at which they do. So if you're thinking mm-hmm. about growing a baby, the thyroid needs to be in a really healthy spot to be able to do so. And it's also going to help be able to mitigate some of like the postpartum hair loss and other types of unwanted symptoms mm-hmm. that happen too, if your thyroid's in a really good place before pregnancy. Okay. So I definitely say, like, at minimum, from a hormone perspective, understand where your progesterone levels are, understand where your thyroid hormone levels are. Don't just get them into the normal range, like optimize them. If they're not optimal, you know, ask those bigger questions. What are the root causes as to why these hormones aren't where they should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing that I'm so big on before pregnancy is women really working on detoxification. And one of the reasons for that is just because we know that all of these different toxins that a lot of times are somewhat out of our control that we're being exposed to through inhalation, through air, you know, water, mm-hmm. all of these things. We know that they impact the baby more than they impact the mom. And we also know that they can be transferred during pregnancy, and that they also can be transferred in through breast milk as well. Mm-hmm. And babies obviously don't have as robust of an immune system, as robust of a detoxification system as grown adults do. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to impact them to a greater degree. So, you know, you're never going to be like 100% toxin free. You know, I don't think that that's necessarily possible or the goal. But I do think that doing some detoxification support, and you really want to start that like 6 to 9 months prior, because mm-hmm. you don't want to be detoxing anything harmful, you know, a month before you try to get pregnant, because that will put you in a position where your body doesn't feel safe to be able to, you know, conceive. So you really want to be doing this work 6-9 months prior mm-hmm. to be able to put your body in that best position for conception.
Is that like going through your products and like getting rid of like gross ones? Is that going through your cabinets and getting through like, and then checking your like water filter? Like, is it all of that? Or is there more to it than just cleaning out products?
Exposure is definitely the first place to start. So I'd say, yeah, like going through your products of what are you using most often on your skin? What are you breathing in the most often? Especially for people that work in industries, maybe if you're like a hairstylist or mm-hmm. you do nails, you are an esthetician, you're being exposed to these chemicals through all day long, then you really want to, you know, like I have an esthetician client I'm working with right now. And like, we were talking about her cleaning the room, and she's like, I'm using Barbicide. I was like, can you just wear a mask when you use Barbicide? Can you put gloves on? Right? It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than her not masking up before she goes to use something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something to definitely look at. But then the second and kind of third step to that is I really love sauna. I think that it's a really great way to be able to help the body naturally detoxify. Okay. And so if you can use sauna a couple times per week for those couple of months while you're really working on that detoxification, you know, your body during when you're sweating, it's releasing about like 80% water, but then that other 20% are toxins that are being liberated and, you know, different minerals and things too. So mm-hmm. exercise, of course, if you're sweating through exercise, that's great. But if you can sauna, if you can like upregulate that, that's an amazing way to be able to support that. Mm-hmm. And then of course there are, you know, different types of professional grade supplements that can be really helpful that provide some of these nutrients like glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, activated charcoal and such that can help be able to kind of like regulate and absorb some of those toxins as your body is excreting them.
So interesting. But yeah, I'm going to start doing it because I know I'm getting married in May and like my fiance is ready to go any second now. So I'm like thinking of all these things that I should start doing because I'm like in that period now.
Yeah. Start as early as you can.
I think in general, it's probably just better to be using healthier products and you know, cleaning things out. Say someone's listening to this and they're like, this is so interesting. I don't know if I have hormonal problems or things going on, but like, I would just love to know. What would you recommend to those people? Like, go get these tests. Are there any like at-home versions of the things that you would recommend? Anything like that, who someone is like super interested in it?
Testing is really helpful, but you want to make sure that you're working with someone that you trust that's going to be able to help you understand and analyze the results and then be able to help you put a plan together of, okay, what to do now, right? Mm-hmm. Because testing is only as good as the plan that you have from there. And so that's one of the reasons why sometimes it kind of feels like kind of like an end to the road when you go to the doctor and you just get labs back. You're like, okay, but now what does this mean? What do I do with this? Right. Yeah. So I think that that's probably something to just keep in mind for people mm-hmm. In my practice and a lot of other, you know, functional dietitians, you know, functional doctors and different types of health practitioners. You know, we are doing testing both through, like I said, you know, urine, blood, saliva, and it really just depends on what we're trying to test. So for example, for a lot of women, if I'm testing things like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, I'll probably test through urine because we're able to get those metabolites, like I mentioned earlier, which does give us a lot more information that you can't get through blood. But then I'm always going to test thyroid hormones through blood. And I'm always going to test insulin through blood. Adrenal hormones like cortisol, you can either test through urine or through saliva, but those are really the most accurate ways to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. There are companies out there that do at-home testing that you probably can order through them. But like I said, just make sure it has a plan that comes along with it so that you know how to implement things. Mm-hmm. And then, as I mentioned too, you know, sometimes there is like a root cause to like those imbalances. So, you know, it may be helpful to not just do the hormone testing, but also do something along with it so that you can really understand when you get those results back, okay, why are these hormones imbalanced? And then you know exactly what to do about it. Mm-hmm. But definitely if you're getting labs done at your doctor, I mean, at least if you're getting your thyroid hormone levels checked, say that you're listening to this, you're trying to conceive, you're like, okay, I don't know where my thyroid is. Make sure that you're not just getting a TSH, make sure you're getting the full thyroid panel, okay, which a lot of doctors won't run until your TSH comes back out of range. But you want to get the full panel, which includes TSH, which stands for thyroid stimulating hormone. You want your free T4, free T3. You want to have at least all of those guys at the same time, because that's really going to help you be able to make changes. If you just get TSH test, it literally tells you nothing. All it's telling you is how the brain is talking to the thyroid. So you can't really do anything with that information.
Okay. And this might be a dumb question, but I know like therapists can only work within like their state. Is that true for your practice as well? Or can you work with like anyone in the country?
Nationally. Anywhere in the US.
Before we end this, I would love to talk through like food and fitness, because I know that's like a big part of everything. Say that you get your panels back, you have an understanding, like what do you recommend for, I know everyone's probably pretty specific, but like general food things, fitness, it's a big thing right now where cycle syncing is a really big thing, or just like a lower impact lifestyle. It's cardio seems to have gotten a bad rap lately for women, especially. Like, what do you usually recommend for people?
I actually created a program that's called Strength and Hormones. And it's centered really around that is, okay, how should your nutrition be set up? You know, what types of food you should be eating? How should your workouts look? And then what are your daily habits? Because those really to me are like the three pillars to hormone balance. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like my philosophy all wrapped into one, but I am big on strength training. I think that when done well, it is such a powerful tool for women, not only to, you know, improve hormone function, but it also can be so great for bone mineral density, body composition, lean muscle mass, right? So I do really preach strength training to women with hormone conditions. I think that it's important though, that when you're doing that strength training, that it's done really smart, that, mm-hmm. you know, you're really looking at making sure that it's a multi-joint movement. You know, you're doing a squat, you're doing a push-up, right? It's not maybe just like a little accessory movement, because although those can be beneficial in addition to those kind of like more impactful type exercises, mm-hmm. you really want to make sure that from a hormonal standpoint, you've got some of those bigger hormonal response exercises, like a squat, like a deadlift, they're in there. And everyone, of course, has a different starting point. So for some people, that might be body weight to start. It might be with dumbbells. And then eventually you get advanced enough where you're able to use a barbell, right? Mm-hmm. But anywhere you are along that spectrum, the exercise can look exactly the same, okay, right? So those exercise selections are really important. I think that cardio can still be really beneficial for women, but it needs to be done wisely again. And of course, this will kind of depend on the hormonal situation, but I'm really into what's called zone 2. And it's really just the second heart rate zone, essentially. There's typically, we talk about like there's 5 different heart rate zones, right? So you've got like zone 1, which is kind of where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. Zone 2 is right above that. Zone 3 would be when you start to get into what we call anaerobic metabolism, your body's burning carbohydrate for energy. So the benefits of zone 2 is that it's very low impact. It's really easy to recover from. It doesn't create this like stress hormone cortisol response. Mm-hmm. And it's the point where there's the highest amount of fat that's being burned by the cells. So your body's not actually dependent off of much glucose yet. And that makes it a little bit more hormonally supportive. So typically when I'm kind of setting up a woman's week for those exercises and things within that program, they're doing a couple of days with zone 2. And then in between those days, they're doing the strength training type workouts.
What would zone 2 be, like a HIIT class, or is it like running on the treadmill? What would you say like example wise zone 2 is?
Most women, it's going to be somewhere around like 120 to 140 beats per minute. So if you have an Apple Watch, you have an Oura Ring, you could always, you know, track where your heart rate is. Mm-hmm. And it's going to depend on your age and your fitness level. So for me, it's typically an incline walk, okay, or like a hike. That's usually going to put me into that zone. I haven't seen many women that can be in that zone on a light jog unless they're really very like well-conditioned endurance athlete, where jogging is like, you know, a walk in the park, right? So I've also been able to, for myself, do kind of a mix of like, you jog for a couple of minutes, you walk to bring your heart rate back down to the zone, you jog again, right? Something like that. But it can also even be more of like a circuit training style workout, but that's not HIIT. So like if you were doing something like an F45 workout, you might honestly be in zone two until you get to like, you know, burpees, mountain climbers, like those types of things where they're really targeted to get your heart rate up. But you know, if you're doing like lunges and then you're doing like a plank, right, you're probably going to be somewhere around zone two if you're continuing to string those types of workouts together.
Okay. And then food wise, what is your philosophy on food?
I think there's like some foundational things. And then of course, within someone's hormone imbalance, there's like specific things that they can really do that, you know, maybe really pay attention to more that's going to help them. I'm really big on food as medicine and using, you know, different types of foods to be able to provide that different medicinal value for the body. So I kind of see it as like a two-prong approach. It's what you're eating and then it's how you're eating. So it's like how you're pairing those foods together is the second more like higher level part of that, right? So what you're eating, I mean, we want to be having tons of plant diversity in the diet. Not only are those going to provide you with lots of vitamins and minerals that are used to make and convert hormones, but they're also going to support your gut microbes, which are also really important to hormone production. So that, you know, plant diversity is including vegetables, fruits, legumes, root vegetables, nuts, seeds, herbs, all those guys in there. So lots of plants. You know, I do work with some plant-based individuals, but I myself believe that quality, you know, meats and fish and eggs and things have a purpose for hormones. And especially when we're talking about like fertility and preconception, you know, we know how important choline is, for example, to brain development for the baby. And you only get choline from beef liver and from egg yolks. Most people aren't eating beef liver nowadays. So egg yolks are kind of like your best bet, right? For that. So there's definitely benefit. You know, iron, for example, is needed for thyroid hormone production. You lose a lot of iron during your cycle, right? So I think that, you know, those quality animal proteins can be really powerful in there too, but least processed as possible, as many plants, and then using quality proteins as, you know, a small percentage of that to really be able to get those nutrients in and support your lean muscle mass and things. And like in terms of the structure of your day, it's just really important, like the frequency in which you're eating and then what that plate looks like, how you're kind of balancing everything together, because that balance of that plate and how frequently you're eating is really going to dictate your blood sugar, which is going to impact insulin levels, impact cortisol levels, and that's going to impact your progesterone, your thyroid. So it's like kind of, we were saying, it's like a domino effect, right? Like if one thing gets thrown off, then you're going to see those hormones start to become impacted down the road.
Looking at your plate, is it like mostly vegetables, like a little like protein? Is it kind of that style, like a little carb generally?
You know, I talked about earlier, right? Like my experience of working with a lot of active women. And although I don't as much anymore, I think that, you know, with someone that's really active, they might need the opposite of what other women are going to need, right? Because they might be having hormone issues like I was when I was 19 years old, because I was trying to eat like how a woman that maybe isn't as active should be eating. And it wasn't working for me. You know, I needed a lot more carbohydrates. So it will look a little bit different based off activity level, but I'd say like as a really good baseline, 50% of your plate coming from non-starchy vegetables and a variety of those is a really great place to start. So, you know, that's things like broccoli, cauliflower, green beans, mushrooms, all those types of guys. About 25% coming from one of those quality protein sources. I'm really big on people trying to eat as much protein that's off the bone or that has those natural oils in it. So I think like our society, we tend to lean a lot more towards the muscle meats, like chicken breast and egg whites and like non-fat yogurt and things. And although they are high in protein, there's really not much like medicinal nutritional value from them. The medicinal nutritional value comes from those like natural oils and the collagen and things that are in those meats. So having, you know, a whole chicken or a, you know, piece of grass-fed beef that has some of those oils, salmon, right? You're going to get a lot more benefit.
Yeah, that's got a bad rep for a while.
Yeah, they did. I know. And I feel like that's why like people feel so unsatiated too when they do start to eat cleaner, is because like they'll just have a salad with chicken on it. And it's like, well, yeah, you're not going to feel satiated because there's like no flavor in that. There's no oils. There's, you know, no starches. There's nothing in it that's going to really like give your body those signals that like this was nourishing.
Supplements. Is there any that you like generally recommend to people, or is it all based on like what you're paneling and all that stuff looks like?
Yes. I mean, I typically will individualize supplements based off of someone's testing results. And then I always use professional grade supplements. So it's really important for people to know that there's a difference between consumer grade supplements. Just like with skincare, there's like stuff you can buy at Target. And then there's things you can buy through like a licensed esthetician or at a like quality skincare place, right? Huh. So you just want to make sure that when you are buying things that you know the quality of it, because supplements actually aren't regulated by the FDA. So it is very much like a crapshoot, right?
Yeah.
But then also with them is like, you have to be hitting the therapeutic dosages for it to even make an impact. So a lot of times I see with supplements, like they'll throw an ashwagandha in there and say it's like for hormone balance, but they have like 50 milligrams of ashwagandha. And the research shows you need like 800 to 1000 milligrams for it to actually improve cortisol levels. So it's like,
a marketing thing.
Yeah. It's like, okay, it has ashwagandha, but it's not doing anything because there's like a lick of it, you know?
Yeah.
So okay. I love adaptogens. Ashwagandha is an adaptogen. So is like holy basil, you know, rhodiola, some of these that people might be familiar with. And I think they're great for what a lot of women struggle with, which is the cortisol and the adrenal issues that are then driving a lot of the other issues. So if you can get your hands on a quality adaptogen, think that that's excellent and is a really great like foundational hormone support. And then, you know, probably also doing some like multi-mineral support, a multivitamin, some of them are better than others. I mean, if you're trying to conceive, I would definitely go like quality prenatal route, but even just like some minerals like magnesium, you know, making sure you've got like selenium in there, especially if you're trying to thyroid hormone levels, those things can be really helpful, hormonally.
Okay. So no gummy vitamins.
No gummy vitamins.
Damn it. Okay. So where do we find those supplements that, what did you say that they're?
Professional grade. Something
professional. Where do you find those?
You can buy through a company called Fullscript that has like a huge library of all of them. And there's different like healthcare practitioners. Like I have a link to it on my website that you can buy through. Otherwise, there's some better consumer grade options out there that I think their dosages, their quality is up to close to that bar. Thorne Research is a really great company that people might be familiar with. Gaia Herbs is a really great herbal company. They have a lot of those like adaptogen type products. Seeking Health is another really great company that you can all buy directly off their website. So you don't have to go through a practitioner to be able to purchase.
Okay. Last two questions before I wrap this up. Caffeine and alcohol, like any stimulants for hormones and like cortisol and things like what's good, what's bad. I know like a lot of people are saying that caffeine before eating for women's really bad. Like anything like that.
Yeah. Caffeine before eating can definitely be an issue. And it's really, it's an issue because of, like I said earlier, that stress cup situation, right? It's like what women are doing is they're like getting 5 hours of sleep. They're waking up at 5 a.m. before the sun comes up. They're going to their high intensity interval class with just caffeine in their system, no food. And then they're like rushing to get to the office and then not eating for 3 more hours. Like,
you know, that's every woman I ever met in New York was that.
Exactly. Like that's usually the typical situation. So yes, like caffeine is poisonous in that type of situation. Like you already are running off of cortisol. You don't need more cortisol inducing things like caffeine. Right. So you have to always take these things with a grain of salt. It's like, yes, that probably is going to be beneficial for all people. But if you're like really great with your morning routine and, you know, you're really, you know, regulated with things, I'd say like try to wait at least an hour so that your body can naturally make that cortisol, you know, you can clear out adenosine and things, then wait that hour and then have your coffee. And, you know, as long as it's close to eating, then there shouldn't be a huge hormonal impact that you're going to see. Living off caffeine, you know, having 400 milligrams, you know, 4 shots espresso, like, yes, those are definitely problematic. But, you know, if you're having 1-2 cups of coffee and you're being smart about the rest of that stress cup, then I don't think it's going to negatively harm you that much.
Okay. Alcohol.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the dose makes the poison, right? So, you know, what we know for women is that 1 cup is really kind of like that upper limit per day. Anything beyond that, you're going to start to see impacts, you know, being made. Especially, you know, the thing to note is that the liver is such a critical organ for hormone balance. And a lot of people don't talk about the liver enough unless you're like in the medical field, because it's just kind of like this weird organ. Like the gut is like cute and fancy and it looks like it's like poop emoji. The liver, it's like, what the heck, right? But the liver is where all essentially all hormones go through. So like if you're talking about balancing your estrogen, if you're talking about, you know, improving your gut function, you're talking about your thyroid hormones, the liver is going to be like that central governor of everything. So if you've got a lot of alcohol going down that, if you've got like all these toxins, like beauty products and all these things, you know, if you've got pharmaceuticals that you're maybe having to take on a regular basis, that's all going to bog down the liver. And some people either don't genetically have like really great, like fast liver detoxification abilities, or maybe they're not getting the nutrients in to be able to support that. You can literally Google search like nutrients that are involved in liver detoxification, and you'll see that there's a lot. So it's like, a lot of times people try to say that it's just a green juice, but it's so much more than that. Like there's amino acids, there's so many different vitamins that are used. So like I drink alcohol. I mean, you know, I drink coffee, I do those things, but I'm very smart and intentional about it. You know, like when I drink, I drink wine, or I drink like, you know, good tequila, and I don't like binge drink, you know, and if I have wine, I get it from a company that tests for toxins and sugar and things, because the wine industry in California, especially, is like pretty crappy. But like, I enjoy those things, you know? And I think that that's really important too, is like, sometimes it can feel, when we talk about hormones, it's like living in this bubble where you like, you know, don't ever sleep, you don't ever stay up late, and you always wake up on time, and you don't drink alcohol, and you don't drink coffee. And it's like, what is life? You know, like that sounds so boring. So I think that it has to be really important that you take all these things and implement them into your lifestyle, and think about like balance, and always coming back to like, how can I take care of my body more, rather than always thinking about it from a place of like, I can't do this, or restriction, because that just feels really cruddy to anyone.
I loved everything we talked about. This is so good. And I know that people can learn a lot more from you. So give us like a quick, like how they can work with you if they're interested in this, and then like your podcast, everything that you kind of have going on before we wrap.
Yeah. So my company is called Functional Feeling Nutrition. And my website's functionalfeeling.com. I do one-on-one functional nutrition coaching, and that's where we do all the lab testing and everything, and it's completely one-on-one. So you can learn more about that on my website. And then I also have a group program called Strength and Hormones. And that's really for like foundational nutrition, exercise education about supporting hormones. And then there's also like workouts and, you know, meals and things that come with that. So those two things, you can find more info on my website. My podcast is called Strength and Hormones. And I bring on a lot of different experts in the field, whether it's related to, bring on a lot of doctors to talk about like specific things within like lab testing and things, and how some of those higher level conversations in a more digestible way. I also bring on people that talk more about kind of like the mental health aspect of like women's health and things. And then we also, my husband actually is a strength conditioning coach. And so he's who does all of the workout programming for my strength and hormone program. And so he comes on a lot, and we talk about hormone supportive workouts and things. So, that's a great place to be able to learn more, about just kind of hormones and this confusing, overwhelming type topic that I know can sometimes feel that way. And then my Instagram is at nutritionwithlo, and you can come join with me over there.
I love it. You're so knowledgeable. Last question I have for you is like, any last piece of advice, any like where we should go from here, like anything like that to wrap us up?
Yeah. I think that, you know, having that testing done initially is always really helpful, but I would always start with just like really diving into understanding hormones more. Like I tell people that the lowest hanging fruit, if you're just trying to understand your cycle, is to just like get a thermometer, start testing your basal body temperatures, understand your cycle, like when you're going to see those temperature elevations, what it means, maybe download an app like Natural Cycles where they help you kind of understand that a bit more. I think that's a really great starting point. And then once you want to dive even deeper, then you can start to, you know, maybe get more education on it or do the lab testing and things of that sort. And then I think that it's just so important for women, like I said, kind of earlier, is to not look at this as a way of like depriving or making your life like more rigid, you know? And I think like, I can say that just because I'm a very structured person, and I'm like very type A as well. And so coming from like spending, I feel like 10 years of like my adulthood really being that way, it's like, I feel like I'm like on this other end where I'm like, you can have all those things you want and have balanced hormones. Like that is possible. And how can you achieve that and choose that as your way to approach this? And so with all the women I'm working with, I'm really trying to help them find what that looks like for them, because you want this to be something that as you're making these changes for yourself, that you're constantly coming back to and asking yourself, like, what can I do to support my body further? And what can I do to like love myself, to honor myself, because that's always going to be way more supportive long-term than if you're, you know, asking yourself from the place of like restriction, deprivation, or, you know, you're being mean to yourself. So just being nice to yourself and patient and really doing things that work for you long-term.
Thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for this conversation. I'll link everything so people can come and find you and work with you and all that good stuff. But I loved this. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That is it for me today, you guys. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. Before you go, make sure that you rate, review, follow, subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And in the spirit of sharing, be sure to share the podcast with a friend or give us some love on social media and tag us at Something to Share Podcast on Instagram. See you next Wednesday.